Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Listen to the Todd Feinberg Show on the free Odyssey app. Download and like WTIC and follow Todd Feinberg today.
Well, I made some people angry with what I said about unions before, but the simple thing with unions is this, that if you want to have a freedom-based society, that is a capitalist society, one where everybody gets to do whatever they want to do as long as they're not interfering with somebody else's rights to do the same, you keep government as small as possible, and you make sure that there aren't anti-democratic forces in the society. Ones that would negate the will of the people and stand in its way when the people are trying to exert their will. So unions were created for the purpose of creating special interest power centers that could be outside of the reach of the people, anti-democratic mechanisms. And that's why you have to be against them, regardless of what benefits you might have had in your life from them or people you know might have obtained. When I'm knocking unions, I'm not saying they haven't done things for people. I'm saying they're not a legitimate organization. It's easy to create organizations that are dictatorships or have rigged power systems that are illegitimate that help people. But the thing that helps the most people is having a free society that's capitalist and allows everybody to pursue their passions. And that's what we want to have, right? Right. 860-522-9842. Rant line number 860-751-4698. Let's see how your ride home is going.
It's the Todd Feinberg Show, live from the NJ Diet Studios on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Good afternoon. It's WTIC. Going to be raining this weekend. You might want to go to the movies. And a lot of people aren't saying that anymore who used to. My wife and I used to go religiously, and it's just we got out of the habit with COVID and now with all the streaming services. And movie theaters are fighting to get people back. But what exactly are they doing, and will it get you back? Joining us to talk about it, Dr. Andrew Draper. He is the co-host of a podcast called Off Script Film Review. He's on staff at the School of the Arts at SMU, Southern Methodist University. Andrew Draper, welcome to WTIC. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me on.
So what are these poor companies doing? I worry about them. I do when I go, because sometimes we're in those luxurious seats, and as enormous as the seats are, they could just give us the whole room because there's usually nobody else there.
Right. Well, in the last few years, theaters have tried to make a lot of upgrades, particularly during the pandemic when theaters were kind of empty. They brought in new seats. They're bigger. They have recliners. They're heated. There's also, you know, special screening types you can do. There's like 4DX and kind of 360 screens, as well as, you know, food delivered to you while you eat. So they're doing quite a lot to try to entice people back to the theaters.
And what's working? Part of my problem with going back is it seems to me that it's younger films, more blockbusters, and the comic book characters brought to life on the screen, to get in younger kids who like those noisy theaters and stuff. Is there anything being done that's for people who like a more mature movie?
Well, unfortunately, theaters can do whatever they want to try and entice people, but at the end of the day, it's about the movies that are coming out. And you are starting to get kind of bigger spectacle films, things like last year's Top Gun Maverick, Avatar The Way of Water that came out around Christmas. We have the Barbie movie coming out this year or this summer, as well as a lot of superhero films. So these kind of big event pictures are the kind of things that get people out now.
So that's what they need to do to fill the theaters today. They can't provide the balance that they used to have.
Right. That's kind of a challenge, is, you know, everyone will come out for these big features, but, you know, theaters really need people going to the movies 2-3 times a month. And that means, you know, you can't have a big event picture more than once or twice a month. And so you really need people coming out to smaller films, kind of mid-budget films. And we've kind of seen a lot of those disappear and kind of go to streaming instead.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's a different environment, and it's one that favors just sitting in your living room rather than going out. But going out is fun. And I do believe, as somebody who loves movies, that, and you must feel this way, that there's something powerful and different about sitting in a darkened theater, especially with your fellow citizens there as well, and having a group experience and having that big screen. It's exciting.
Right. That's definitely something that's unique only to the theatrical experience, that you can't get at home no matter how good your setup. I've seen, I remember when I saw Endgame, the final Avengers movie, there was a couple of big moments where everyone got excited. People are yelling, screaming, losing their minds about what's happening on screen. And that's so different when you're there. And that's just not the experience you're going to get at home.
So what's the condition of these venues? I heard in the news a month or two ago, there was a story that Amazon was negotiating to buy one of the theater chains. Is that happening, do you know? And is that kind of consolidation how movie theaters might survive moving forward?
That's been rumored for a while, with Amazon possibly buying a theater to exhibit their films. They have to be careful of old laws from the 40s about that said you couldn't both produce and distribute,
because they used to be a single thing, right? And they broke them up. The feds broke them up, I think.
Right, exactly, because it was anti-competitive. Mm-hmm. So that could definitely help. You could see, Disney or Netflix or any of these mega companies buying theaters, but none of them really seem to be that enticed by it and haven't really moved to do it.
So what's your feeling about movies? I do worry that we're not going to have them moving forward. You know, back to that idea of that it is such a unique experience. I feel like we'd really lose something as a culture if we didn't have that to go to.
Well, over the pandemic, they were saying it was the death knell for theaters and that theaters might go away completely. But we haven't seen that happen. And actually, the streamers are finding that it's very difficult to actually make a profit on streaming. It's very popular and you can get subscribers, but making it profitable is very difficult without the theaters. And that's what they're discovering. If we want to make a ton of money, we have to put our movies in theaters first and maybe help that to advertise our streaming service. That's kind of an approach that Apple and Amazon are starting to take now.
And is the extra money because of what they're getting for box office, or is it that it creates more excitement about the movie and brings people to their app? Because it's hard to imagine that they've got enough movies that are bringing in enough people that it's really impacting them that much.
They definitely can make way more money on those first few weeks when a movie's in theaters than they can on the streaming app. They also don't share very much information, so it's hard to tell.
So it's speculating exactly. All this stuff.
Right, but at the same time, they're really struggling to make streaming profitable, and they're cutting a lot of films, they're cutting a lot of production. Like, gone are the heydays of Netflix writing Martin Scorsese a $200 million check to make The Irishman. They're really clamping down on spending.
On budgets,
Right, and they're having to work with theaters to just make more money up front, and then also help ad, like I said, help advertise their streaming services. Amazon recently did that with the movie Air, the Nike Michael Jordan picture, and some of their fall releases for Oscars, things like Martin Scorsese's Killers of the Flower Moon. That's going to be in theaters first, and then you can find it on the app. So that's a different strategy than what they were doing even a few years ago.
Are any of these strategies changing, in your opinion, the nature of the films that are being made?
Absolutely. We were seeing more, like I said, event pictures, like really big films. Everything is either a micro budget, a $5 million film, or a $200 million film. It seems like there's not much room in the middle as far as when you're doing a big, wide release. And we're seeing a lot of more smaller, indie, interesting stuff kind of end up on the streamers.
We're talking to Andrew Draper. His podcast is called Off Script Film Review. He's at the School of Arts of SMU. Anything else you want us to know so that we can be the wisest people around in terms of what's going on with movies?
Well, just that theaters are very different place to place, even within a certain region in your certain city. I know there's great theaters in my city. There's not so great ones. And so it kind of gets you venture. If you venture out and do a little bit of exploring, you can find where really the great places are, or maybe like a historical theater might be better for like older films or classic films you want to go see. And then there's like, you know, where's the nearest IMAX? Where's the nearest kind of 4DX screen? That I think helps the viewer kind of make better choices when, you know, with the movies that are coming out.
And you know, I just thought of something. You were talking about how the streaming companies, they think they need to, or they've learned that they need to put films into theaters to create enough revenue to support making the films. And I realize a big movie can gross $1 billion, right? Like some big blockbuster shoot 'em up or a comic book movie. So there's really nothing you can do to equal that on streaming, right?
Right, exactly. And that's what they're finding. Netflix is the only company that's making money or profiting in the streamer space. Everyone else, Disney Plus, HBO, Peacock, whoever else, they're all losing money. They're trying to figure out a way to stop the bleed, cut costs, cut production. And this is kind of the approach they're taking. Netflix put out Rian Johnson's Knives Out sequel, Glass Onion, in for one weekend in theaters and made $10 million. And everyone said they left so much money on the table. If they would have just put it out for 6 weeks, done a proper marketing campaign behind it, they probably could have made $200-300 million instead of just the paltry 10 that they did. But
it
Netflix
seems
isn't interested in theaters.
It seems, too, that even if you just put it in the theater for a week or two, that it creates a lot of awareness. There's a lot of publicity about films opening in the movie theater sometimes.
Right. That's part of it. It's the PR. It's the buzz of it. When something comes out in theaters, it just gets a much wider footprint than if it just goes straight to your streaming service, especially if someone doesn't subscribe to that service. I know that I do that. If something's coming to Apple TV Plus, I'm not really interested because I don't subscribe to that service.
Well, that's one of the problems. You were talking about their struggle to survive, and it does strike me that we're in a moment where there's been this super expansion. Anybody who had a library of films started their own app, and they all charge $5 to $15 a month or whatever, $10 to $15. It's a lot of money. Have a couple of them, but you can't have 7 or 8 of them, and it's frustrating to try to watch films. So I'm assuming they're going to get squeezed back down, and they're going to start merging and creating bigger destinations. Any signs of that?
Yeah, yes, definitely. Actually, this week, someone came out with a combination of like Peacock, Netflix, and a third service, and it was kind of the first of this kind of bundle. And you're exactly right. We're going to be seeing consolidation of all these different services. It's kind of a survival of the fittest, and whichever streamers are going to end up, you know, in the next 2-3 years, we'll see who actually can survive.
Andrew Draper, what's the best film to see right now?
Well, the big one out this weekend is Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. The first film is excellent. It's probably one of the best superhero films made, and so I'm super excited for the sequel. I'm seeing that tonight.
How about the best movie that's out right now?
Best movie? Oh, that would be hard to say. It's got to be this one. I saw Fast X last week. That's a lot of fun if you're into the Fast and Furious. The Little Mermaid remake was okay, definitely for the kids and the family. So there's a lot of options out right now.
That Barbie movie you mentioned, I heard tell that that's going to be a huge speculation that that's going to be a huge movie. Is that your prediction?
Absolutely. It somehow generated this strange kind of buzz about it. It just has this look that's really sharp and unique, and it looks like a lot of fun. It looks like the kind of movie you get together, some people dress up, and like you get to go to dinner before and go to the movie, and it just looks like a great time at the movies, and that's what people want to have.
Well, some people, I think you and I are incompatible. You couldn't pay me enough to go see some of these movies, but you're where the crowds are, so congratulations to you. How's the podcast going, Off Script Film Review?
Oh, it's going great. We've been doing it for 5 years. We just put out episode 216 last week, discussing The Little Mermaid and also the HBO film Reality about the NSA whistleblower Reality Winner, which was a nice little 80-minute kind of intense film. So we're doing well, still chugging along.
Andrew Draper, thank you for joining us and appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me on.
All righty, take care. So that's Andrew Draper from SMU talking films. He likes those blockbusters. You couldn't pay me enough to go see a Spider-Man movie or a Tom Cruise movie. Oh, they'd have to chain me to that comfy chair. I like it, people who can act in movies. I'm incompatible with most people when it comes to films, I guess. I find that torture to think about watching him in a film. I have no respect for his acting. He's a good businessman. I admire people for like him for their business savvy and their drive. But I also think he's a little off his rocker, too. He's so driven. Interesting character, that Tom Cruise. All right, so we've got another guest next half hour, I believe, and then last hour we're going to do our order up hour. And it just occurred to me that one of the questions we should ask today, if you want a little tease on something to talk about, is film, movie theater, movie food. Food for movie theaters is what I'm trying to say. And because I notice more people are bringing food in, and that the movie theaters, I mostly find myself at an AMC, and they seem not to care what you carry in, which opens a whole different world of food. So that can be one of our questions today. What do you like to watch when you're watching a film? Or what do you want to eat when you're watching a film? It can be the same thing at home. You know, what do you like to cook to have with a film, perhaps? 860-522-9842.
It's Todd Feinberg. It's Todd Feinberg. Monday through Friday, 3 till 6 on WTIC. News Talk 1080.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I'm always looking for where the media's bias is popping up, and they might not even know it's going to. This is Michael on Good Morning America calling the debt ceiling deal a win for Joe Biden.
And for more on the president's win and what he's saying about that fall yesterday, let's bring in our chief White House correspondent.
For more on the president's win, but why was it a win for Joe Biden as opposed to for Speaker McCarthy? Why doesn't he look at that and think, oh, Speaker McCarthy's really coming off strong here. He's the guy who brokered the deal.
And what he's saying about that fall yesterday, let's bring in our chief White House correspondent,
now listen
Mary
to
Bruce.
This.
But he has been careful not to tout this as a political victory, instead calling the bipartisan agreement a big win for the country.
Oh, so Joe Biden doesn't even call it a win. But Michael calls it a win.
And for more on the president's win and what he's saying about that.
But he has been careful not to tout this as a political victory.
He doesn't even touch base with his own reporter. She says, no, the president doesn't want to call this a win. He calls it a win for the American people, but not for him. This was a compromise. No side won from their perspective, right? Or did they? I don't know. But I haven't heard anyone claim that the president got some kind of victory out of this. Very strange, very strange. 860-522-9842. Don't forget, Order Up coming up next hour. That's our food hour. Last hour, that's how we wrap up the week.
Now, back to the Todd Feinberg Show, live from the NJ Diet Studios on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Yep, Friday. The heat leaves us today. The cold comes in. It's turning out to be one of those years where the weekends don't necessarily make for the best weather. Stephen Suffield. Hey, Steve.
Oh, I didn't know I was on the line.
You're on the air. Go ahead, Steve.
Okay, to get ahead of myself, there is the best food for a movie theater is popcorn.
Oh, okay. We're doing that next hour. But, yeah, popcorn
is... Yeah,
because
what you can do is you can eat it, and then you can throw it at your annoying people you're with, and then you just pick it off your shirt.
Yeah, well, yes, and you... Some of it goes in your pocket, and you can eat that later.
Okay, that's a little bit too much.
All right, thank you, Steve. Good to hear from you. Steve, with the Order Up, a little tease of Order Up. I said we would talk about movie food since we had a movie segment, among other things. Zach in Berlin. Hi, Zach.
Hi. I'm just commenting on the debt ceiling and Biden's commentary. I'm surprised that he's not saying it's a win because it's a win for him and the Dems because our deficit is $2 trillion per year. Mm-hmm. And they are touting that deal is going to save $1.3 trillion over 10 years. Mm-hmm. But over that 10-year period, we're still going to have a $20 trillion deficit minus 1.3.
Yes.
I think that the Dems really got away with murder here, and I'm kind of disappointed that Republicans didn't push a bit harder to curb spending. That's all. Thank you.
I think you're right. The Republicans did a great job of orchestrating the thing and getting him into a corner, and then they didn't do anything with it. It's kind of inexplicable, isn't it?
Yeah.
Thank you, Zach. What was the point of that whole exercise if they weren't actually going to push for something? But I think, again, what they're working on is their careers all the time. And they don't actually. Somebody, who was it? It was in the New York Times today. Today's New York Times. It was by The Economist. Paul Krugman, who usually writes a lot of nonsense, but he said something here I thought was interesting. Let me read it to you. He said, first of all, he said this was a terrible deal for Republicans. They could have gotten so much more out of it. And then he said, Republicans don't actually care about the budget deficit. Arguably, they never did. But a dozen years ago, many in the media and the political establishment took Republicans' fiscal posturing at face value. These days, their true lack of concern is out in the open. So it's hard to find a commentator who seriously believes that a party seeking to prevent a crackdown on tax evasion cares about debt. Third, the Republican Party has largely backed off of its push to drastically shrink government. We've come a long way from 2005 when President George W. Bush tried to privatize Social Security. These days, even hard right budget proposals tend to exempt Social Security and Medicare. And I believe that Republicans are beginning to realize that Medicaid has also become an extremely popular program. Coming next, the realization that even white, rural, very MAGA areas like, say, Kentucky's 5th Congressional District have become deeply dependent on food stamps. So I think he's right that there's a problem for Republicans when it comes to cutting the budget, and that is it's scary to talk about, to even talk about. Forget about suggesting. You don't want to suggest that you want to cut one of the benefit programs, Medicare, Social Security, Medicaid. And those are anti-capitalist, anti-democratic, anti-American kinds of concepts, that the federal government is going to run big social programs that give them the power to drive us off a fiscal cliff. I think Republicans are afraid of that now. How do you stand up and say that you want to cut Social Security when we're so far down the road on Social Security? It's a big social program, and so many people have paid into it. But you know, even if your proposal was, well, we have to honor the people who've invested in it, but we do need to scale it back. And we need to make it constitutional, we need to get it out of the hands of the federal government and push it off to the states. Let the states do what they want with it. But there's no justification for constitutionally for having it in the hand for the federal government to be running big tax and spend programs to take care of people. It's craziness. And that's why we're in the fix that we're in today. That's why we have the horrible debt that we have today. That's why it's such a disaster, our country, is because we've allowed these things to take hold. And that once you get that, you have runaway government, which is what we're suffering from today. 860-522-9842. We do suffer from runaway government, no doubt about it. Runaway. So in a way, it's kind of funny. Critics of Democratic politics used to berate activists for focusing on social issues while allowing Republicans to dictate the economic agenda. Now Republicans are waging war on the Disney Corporation while the Biden administration establishes large-scale industrial policy to fight climate change. So what happened on the debt negotiations? Maybe it came down to this. Kevin McCarthy wasn't willing to blow up the economy to extract policy concessions because he's the leader of a party that no longer cares about policy. Well, I would say neither party cares about policy. I've been saying that for years. And the proof of it is in the state of Connecticut and the politics here, that where you see on a regular basis, all they do is trade power for their own purposes. And that's the thing we have to find a way to beat, right? We've got to find a way to beat a system where the money is diverted to the voters of the political party. And once you're stuck in that kind of system, I don't know what you do. I don't know how you get out of where we are today, where it's where everyone's getting paid to vote. And they're getting paid with public policy. How do you get out of that kind of fix? 860-522-9842. Rant line number 751-4698. Dave in Brantford. Hello, Dave.
Yeah, Todd, I hate to do politics on Friday, but you open a door I can't resist. California has made a tax credit, a fully refundable tax credit on your state income tax for your union dues. And so, therefore, the union members do not feel any weight for paying union dues. The taxpayers feel all the weight for whatever level of union dues are asked of the union members. And two more dominoes are about to fall. The all-blue Michigan and Biden's home state of Delaware are also considering this dollar-for-dollar tax credit. You don't even have to pay taxes up to the amount that you're getting a credit for. It's a refundable tax credit. So you may not even earn enough money to have to pay income taxes, but you'll get your entire union dues amount back as a check in the mail. Talk about rigging the system for your own voters. And your listeners are certainly up to speed knowing what the unions do with this money once they get the members paying in the dues.
Dave, the part of it I haven't seen yet is what happens with constitutional challenges. Is this legal in California, have you seen?
Apparently, the story I read, California enacted it last year. Tax credits for union dues, which forced taxpayers to subsidize Democrats. It happened last year in the Golden State, and it's apparently it's legal now. And the other blue states are noticing this cool new rigging scheme to perpetuate themselves.
There you go.
Thank you for letting me weigh in on it on Friday. Bye.
Happy to hear from you, Dave. Thank you. 860-522-WTIC. So that kind of malicious targeting of money to people who are part of a special interest rigging scheme, and that's the language that Dave is using, and he's right on using that language. I want to play you a sound cut. This is Jason Furman. He used to be on Barack Obama's Council of Economic Advisors, and he's now a professor at Harvard University. And this is Jason Furman talking about how it bothers him. Well, I'll let him explain, and then we can talk about it.
So let's distinguish between three different things: the research that economists do, the views they have on public policy, and the views they express on public policy. In terms of the research, I don't think it's perfect. There are days when I'm troubled by the political bias, and frankly, that political bias is mostly left. Almost everyone under the age of 50 who does research, especially in certain areas like empirical micro, is left of center. There are days I'm worried about that, but I go to seminars and, you know, someone presents a paper and maybe it has a left conclusion, and the faculty in the room are less interested in cheerleading the left conclusion and more interested in proving how smart they are by poking holes in the empirical method, the theory, or whatever it is. And there's also a return to research that has contrarian findings. And there's a lot of researchers I know who do their research not because they know the answer and want to prove it to everyone, but because they don't know the answer and want to figure it out, and they love to be surprised. And I could give you a lot of examples of that. So I don't think the research is perfect. I think all the pressure is in one direction, not the other direction, but there are some counter pressures.
So this is Jason Furman, a Barack Obama guy, talking about how if there's research going on, there's probably he says there's left-wing bias in the economic research, and that tilts what's going on. Now, he's trying to make it sound like it's okay because he sees a lot of, in people's personal wishes, they're more complicated than just a political bias. But you can see how if the whole professorial class is in this scheme where they feel like they have to report their evidence a certain way, that's going to have an impact. And this part at the end.
I don't think the research is perfect. I think all the pressure is in one direction.
All the pressure is in one direction. What he's saying is all of the pressure for your conclusions is that you come to left-leaning conclusions.
I don't think the research is perfect. I think all the pressure is in one direction, not the other direction.
That's a bad thing, obviously. Because what that means is that grant money is being pressured. So they're giving out grants for research to people who are going to bring them the conclusions that the power structure wants. And if the power structure is controlled by the left, then it's going to be left-leaning conclusions. That's a problem. That's a really bad thing for our society. Now, he's making it sound lighter, but he's confessing to the things that provide structural rigging of the system. And again, it's public policy. They're doing research. He's talking about grant money being given out. That is federal tax dollars to do research. And that research gets kidnapped so that they're hiring people who give them the answers they want. And that's inescapable if you have a system that's been poisoned in this way. And with the total control of the universities in the hands of the hard left, like the people who come up with all these ideas for crazy stuff to do to public policy, to do to our country, to do to our culture. Wow. We're in a crazy place. There have been signs, I think, or at least people have been perceiving signs that maybe things are reaching a turning point, because you do have this sense, you do have this idea that at some point people are going to be provoked enough. The, say, silent majority. A couple of people have mentioned just in the last few days to me that there's a silent majority that is getting ready to rise up and insist on... Well, not insist, but to actually be provoked and to be angry and say, we can't do it anymore. This is it. I can't stand it anymore. I've had people say that to me, that's where we are. And I hope that's the case. But there's also the opposite of that would be if we're like the boiling frog example, that the frog that is just placed in lukewarm water and it's slowly warmed. He never knows he's getting boiled into it till it's too late. And that may be us. That may be what's going on, rather than suddenly the water starts burning people and they start screaming at what's going on. And the moment is here. If people are going to be provoked, I think this is the time, and this is the election season, and we're going into an election season on the presidential level. You know, the first debates start in August. At least that's when they're scheduled for the Republicans. So that's coming fast. The election year is almost here. And it's time for people, if they're going to get angry, it's time to get angry, don't you think? If people are going to be provoked, it's time to be provoked. Because all this stuff is going way far. And for those of us who still have a sense of what America is supposed to be and understand what our republic was built on and what capitalism is and the great gift it's been to mankind and what hogwash all this stuff is about white supremacy and all that, it's time, now or never maybe. What do you think? 860-522-9842. But next hour... it's order up. It's our last hour of the week, and we will discuss food issues, food questions that I'll be asking of you. So stay with us on WTIC as we go off to the VPS Lawyers Traffic Center. Mark Christopher has the latest for us on the ride home. Mark.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.